fantastic week.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. Russia attacked power stations and other infrastructure, causing widespread outages across Ukraine as Kyiv's forces pressed a swift counteroffensive that has driven Moscow's troops out of the swaths of territory it had occupied in the northeast. The bombardment ignited a massive fire at a power station at Kharkiv's western outskirts and killed at least one person. President Volodymyr Zelensky denounced the deliberate and cynical missile strikes, as he called it, against civilian targets as acts of terrorism. Ukraine's second-largest city of Kharkiv appeared to be without power Sunday night. Separately, the nuclear power plant in the Russia-occupied south completely shut down in a bid to prevent a radiation disaster as fighting raged nearby. Americans remembered 9/11 on Sunday with tear-choked tributes and pleas to never forget. 21 years after the deadliest terrorist attack on U.S. soil at the Pentagon, which also was targeted on 9/11, President Joe Biden vowed that the U.S. would continue working to root out terrorist plots and called on Americans to stand up for the very democracy that guarantees the right to freedom that those terrorists on 9/11 sought to bury in the burning fire, smoke, and ash.
The air struck us in that brilliant blue morning. The air filled with smoke. And then came the sirens and the stories. Stories of those we lost. Stories of incredible heroism from that terrible day. The American story. American story itself changed that day.
And First Lady Jill Biden spoke at the third site in the field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. More at voanews.com. Again, voanews.com. This is VOA News. People wanting to pay tribute and the final respects to Queen Elizabeth II as she lies in state at the House of Parliament in London and need to be prepared for a long wait. The government has published guidelines for people wishing to file past the late Queen's closed coffin as it lies in state at the Palace of Westminster from 5 p.m. Wednesday until 6:30 on September 19th. Thousands are expected to want to pay tribute to the only monarch that many in the United Kingdom have ever known. The wait in the line is expected to be hours long. Ethiopia's Tigray rebels said Sunday that they were ready for a ceasefire and would accept the peace process led by the African Union. More from VOA's Diane Roberts.
The AU-led peace process would remove an obstacle to negotiations with the government to end almost 2 years of brutal warfare. The announcement was made amid a flurry of international diplomacy after fighting flared last month for the first time in several months in northern Ethiopia, torpedoing a humanitarian truce. The Ethiopian government has previously said it was ready for unconditional talks, quote, anytime, anywhere, end quote, brokered by the Addis Ababa headquartered AU. The AU's commission chief issued a statement welcoming the development. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the United Nations is ready to support the AU-led peace process. Diane Roberts, VOA News.
Residents of Okinawa have re-elected their incumbent governor, who opposes an ongoing U.S. Marine base relocation forced by Japan's central government and wants American troops in a southern island to be reduced further. Hideki Tamaki won about 51% of the effective votes cast in Sunday's election against two challengers, one from Japan's ruling bloc and another backed by the opposition. His victory could deepen tensions between Okinawa and the central government. The plan to move U.S. Marine Air Station Futenma from a crowded neighborhood to a less populated area on the island has already been delayed for years. Okinawans want the base to be removed from the island altogether. Citing growing threats from China, North Korea, and Russia, Japan has bolstered its defense in Okinawa. Recapping our top story, Russia attacked power stations and other infrastructure, causing widespread outages across Ukraine as Kyiv's forces pressed a swift counteroffensive that has driven Moscow's troops out of swaths of territory it had occupied in the northeast. More at VOAnews.com via remotes. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Today is Monday, September 12th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. President Joe Biden marks 9/11 anniversary with tributes to America's heroes, call for unity, and a vow to root out terrorists.
We'll never forget. We'll never give up. I hope we'll remember that in the midst of these dark days, we dug deep. We cared for each other. We came together. We regained the light by reaching out to one another.
Ukraine reclaims large swaths of the country in a long-anticipated counteroffensive as the war hits the 200-day mark.
Russia's defense ministry said it was pulling troops out of its main stronghold in northeastern Ukraine, a sudden collapse of one of the war's principal front lines after Ukrainian forces encircled the area in a surprise advance.
And Queen Elizabeth II's coffin leaves Balmoral Castle for her last journey to London for a state funeral. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. President Joe Biden invoked the memory of America's united response to the September 11, 2001 attacks by al-Qaeda and vowed to, quote, never give up, unquote, in the face of terrorist threats in a solemn commemoration on Sunday at the Pentagon. Nearly 3,000 people died in the attacks when al-Qaeda hijackers flew planes into New York's World Trade Center towers and into the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia, while a fourth plane crashed in Pennsylvania. Passengers on United Airlines Flight 93 overcame the hijackers, and the plane crashed in a field, preventing another target from being hit. There were 59 people aboard American Airlines Flight 77 that crashed into the Pentagon, and another 125 in the building that were killed that day. U.S. President Joe Biden.
So many heroes were made here. So many of your loved ones were those heroes. Began almost immediately with civilians and service members leaping to action as the walls collapsed and the roof began to crumble. They raced into the breach between the 4th and 5th Corridors. We'll never forget. We'll never give up. I hope we'll remember that in the midst of these dark days, we dug deep. We cared for each other. We came together. We regained the light by reaching out to one another and finding something all too rare, a true sense of national unity. To me, that's the greatest lesson of September 11. Not that we will never again face a setback, but that in the moment of great unity, we also had to face down the worst impulses, fear, violence, recrimination directed against Muslim Americans, as well as Americans of Middle Eastern and South Asian heritage. We're not only a nation based on principles, but we are based on an idea, unlike we're the most unique nation in the world, an idea that everyone is created equal and should be treated equally throughout their lives. We don't always live up to it, but we've never walked away from it. That's what makes us strong. That's what makes us who we are. And that's what those hijackers most hoped to destroy when they targeted our buildings and our people. They failed. It's not enough to stand up for democracy once a year or every now and then. It's something we have to do every single day.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. Ukraine has reclaimed large swaths of the country in the south and east in a long-anticipated counteroffensive as the war hits its 200-day mark. Russian forces abandoned their main bastion in northeastern Ukraine on Saturday, after Ukrainian forces made a rapid advance. Chris Dingham of Reuters produced this report.
Russia's defense ministry said it was pulling troops out of its main stronghold in northeastern Ukraine, a sudden collapse of one of the war's principal front lines after Ukrainian forces encircled the area in a surprise advance. Video posted on social media showed Ukrainian troops driving past a tank bearing the Russian pro-war Z symbol in the city of Kupiansk shortly after capturing the single railway hub that supplies Russia's entire front line across northeastern Ukraine. That left thousands of Russian troops abruptly cut off from supplies across an area that has seen some of the most intense battles of the war.
Izum.
A separate social media video showed Ukrainian military at the entrance of Izyum after Moscow abandoned the city. Russia's defense ministry said it ordered troops to leave the area in order to reinforce operations in neighboring Donetsk. The swift fall of Izyum is Moscow's worst defeat since its troops were forced back from the capital Kyiv in March. It could prove to be a decisive turning point in the six-month war, with thousands of Russian soldiers apparently abandoning their ammunition stockpiles and equipment. Ukrainian forces report recapturing dozens of towns and villages held by Russia for months. Since bursting through the front line just days ago, video just released by Ukraine's Ministry of Defense showed troops raising the country's blue and yellow flag in Balaklia, from where Russian forces recently fled. But despite the counteroffensive in the region, the war rages on. Russian rocket fire hit Kharkiv Saturday evening, bringing yet more death and destruction.
That's Chris Dingham of Reuters. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken met with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg to discuss Ukraine's recent military gains and how European countries will get through the coming winter with a lot less Russian gas and oil. Blinken said Russian President Vladimir Putin is using energy as a weapon. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports from the State Department.
As Russia's invasion of Ukraine continues in its seventh month, Ukrainian civilians, mainly women and children, are bearing the brunt of the cost, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Friday, reflecting on his visit Thursday to a children's hospital in Ukraine. Blinken traveled to NATO headquarters in Brussels, saying Russia's war of choice is imposing immense cost, including on the Russian people.
There are a huge number of Russian forces that are in Ukraine, and unfortunately, tragically, horrifically, President Putin has demonstrated that he will throw a lot of people into this at huge cost to Russia, at huge cost to its future.
Blinken said that Russia is no longer able to supply its own forces and has had to turn to Iran and North Korea for weapons. In New York, Russia called a UN Security Council meeting to criticize the West for sending military support to Ukraine in what its envoy said has become a proxy war directed by NATO. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg called on allies to supply special warm uniforms, generators, tents, and equipment to help Ukraine's army get through the coming winter. Blinken said the U.S. will also not leave its European friends in the cold as they prepare for winter and try to get by without Russian gas and oil. One expert told VOA the U.S. will have its work cut out for it to maintain NATO unity on Russian sanctions. Michael Kimmage, a professor of history at the Catholic University of America and a visiting fellow at the German Marshall Fund via Zoom.
And you're going to see, I think, a lot more effort from the Biden administration to manage expectations in Europe, to try to assist with the energy crisis, and at the same time to keep the Ukraine policy as ironclad as it's been for the last 6-7 months.
On a visit to Prague Friday, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said the U.S. and its allies will support Ukraine and each other for as long as it takes. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
The coffin of Queen Elizabeth II left Balmoral Castle as the late monarch begins her last journey back to London for a state funeral. Associated Press correspondent Karen Chamas reports.
Apart from the occasional clicking of a camera, little noise could be heard in the small village of Ballater as the Queen's coffin passed through. Crowds lined the streets yet remained silent to pay their respects to the much-loved monarch. The late sovereign's oak coffin has embarked on a 175-mile journey to Holyrood House Palace in Edinburgh. Her body will then be moved to London for a state funeral that will be held on September the 19th. Karen Chamas, London.
China's mass incarceration of Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities is not on the UN Human Rights Council's packed agenda for a session starting Monday. However, the controversial policy threatens to overshadow all other issues to be examined during the Council's month-long session. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Human rights activists are clamoring for China to be held accountable for its alleged systematic widespread abuse of more than a million Uyghurs and other Muslim minorities in Xinjiang. These calls have grown more insistent since the publication August 31st of a long-awaited UN report accusing China of torture or ill treatment and other violations that could amount to crimes against humanity. Michelle Bachelet issued the report just minutes before stepping down as UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. In departing remarks, she called on the Human Rights Council to keep abreast of the situation in Xinjiang. In a briefing last week, Council President Federico Villegas diplomatically sidestepped questions pertaining to the possible convening of a special session on China. He said the Council did not mandate the report.
I'm the President of a Council of 47 members, and it's state-driven. They have the prerogative, each of the 47, to ask for the Council to do whatever they deem necessary. And so it will be up to the states to decide how to follow up that report or any other report that is brought to the attention of the Council in different formats.
China's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Chen Xu, said China will firmly oppose any efforts to use human rights as a political tool to interfere in its internal affairs. He said nearly 100 countries have expressed their support of what he called China's just position. He added the developing world will reject all anti-China initiatives by Western countries at the upcoming session of the Human Rights Council.
I should say any kind of anti-China actions is again doomed to failure. So in short, we strongly opposing the assessment, the so-called assessment report, and we will strongly oppose any move to move this assessment report to launch any kind of motion or joint actions against us.
Chen said China was ready to establish a working relationship with the newly appointed High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Türk. However, he said Türk must strictly observe his mandate and conduct business in an impartial, non-politicized manner for that relationship to work. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, two more U.S. military planes loaded with tons of aid for Pakistan is affected by flooding from deadly monsoon rains have landed in southern Sindh province. That's one of the worst affected regions in the impoverished country. The country's civil aviation authority said Saturday that each plane was loaded with about 35 tons of relief aid, which will be distributed in the province by the World Food Program. The aircraft landed at Sikar Airport in Sindh, and the U.S. operation that began Thursday will continue until September 16th. Pakistan has suffered under extremely heavy monsoon rains that started early this year in mid-June. Multiple officials and experts have blamed the rains and resulting floodwaters on climate change. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. In Ethiopia's Gambela region, a June attack on the capital by rebel group the Oromo Liberation Army has raised fears of more civil war spreading in the country. Reporter Henry Wilkins spoke to local officials and analysts about what's behind the violence and what it could mean for Ethiopia's security.
In Gambela City, security has been beefed up. Officials say local police have started working in cooperation with troops recently sent to the region by the federal government. A major attack by two rebel groups, the Oromo Liberation Army, OLA, and the Gambela Liberation Front, GLF, caught the city by surprise in June. Local media said up to 37 people were killed. Analysts say it is the first time the Oromo conflict, a decades-old fight among local, federal forces and ethnic Oromo rebels, has reached Gambela City. One witness recounts seeing the OLA enter the city. Abdu Abubekar is a civil servant. He says the shooting began around 6 a.m. No one was expecting it, so no one was well prepared, Abdu Abubekar says. The OLA and the GLF entered the city as far as the regional council building, he says. They entered the city from three directions. I think the Gambela Liberation Front was leading the OLA. Less than a week later, in the Oromia region, around 400 ethnic Amhara were killed by OLA militants. The rapid uptick in violence in what Human Rights Watch calls Ethiopia's other conflict has led some to question if it constitutes a second civil war for the country. Information from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project shows that from August 2021 to July 2022, there were 3,784 deaths linked to the OLA, compared with 651 the previous year, a near fivefold increase. William Davison, an analyst with International Crisis Group, a Belgian-based research organisation, says the increased violence is the result of long-standing grievances related to Oromo self-determination and lack of political representation in Ethiopia's federal system, especially since the current government came to power in 2018.
I think that added fuel to the Oromo Liberation Army insurgency. So after the failure to reintegrate those fighters and their rebellion.
The Oromo comprise the largest ethnic group in the country. Davison was asked if the conflict is as significant as Ethiopia's headline-grabbing war with Tigrayan rebels in the north of the country.
Probably doesn't immediately threaten the regional government authority in Adamawa or the federal government authority in Addis Ababa, Finfinni, but it is, you know, affecting a huge number of people in Oromia, as well as leading to direct violence that's killing combatants and civilians.
Adamawa is a city in the Oromia region. For now, Gambela is calm, but fewer than 10 kilometres beyond its outskirts, local police say there are regular firefights with the OLA. Local officials are keen to project stability. Chankot Chote is head of the Gambela Regional State Peace and Security Office. He says with the help of the special forces, federal police and regular police and the community, the situation has improved. He adds that although the OLA is trying to attack on the outskirts of the town, they will never enter the city again. The OLA is an offshoot of another rebel group, the Oromo Liberation Front, which signed a peace deal with the Ethiopian government in 2018. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Gambela, Ethiopia.
Thank you, Henry. Trials of a new malaria vaccine developed by Britain's University of Oxford shows it is 80% effective, meaning it has the potential to save millions of lives and eventually eradicate the disease. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
The malaria vaccine, named R21, had already shown encouraging trial results after three primary doses, but maintaining that immunity has always been a big challenge. The latest Phase 2 trial involved 450 children aged between 5 and 17 months around the town of Nanoro in Burkina Faso. The results, published in the Lancet Medical Journal, show the higher strength booster dose was 80% effective in preventing malaria infection. No serious side effects were seen. The Serum Institute of India, which has produced millions of doses of the AstraZeneca COVID vaccine, is producing the R21 malaria vaccine. Malaria killed an estimated 627,000 people in 2020, the most recent available data. The vast majority were children under 5 in sub-Saharan Africa. The World Health Organization approved the first ever malaria vaccine in October last year, called RTSS, but R21 may offer even greater hope. Results from the ongoing Phase 3 trial involving 4,800 children are due later this year, and scientists hope to begin mass production in 2023. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of astronomers has announced the discovery of two super-Earth-type exoplanets located only 100 light-years from Earth. According to NASA, super-Earth planets are about twice the size of Earth and up to 10 times its mass. called LP-899b and LP-899c, the planets orbit what is considered the second coolest star detected so far. They note that LP-899c resides in its sun's habitable zone, which is the distance from a star where liquid water could exist on its surface, implying conditions might be right to support life. The team led by the University of Liège in Belgium used the ground-based telescopes of the Speculus Consortium at the European Southern Observatory to confirm the discovery and describe the planets. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned by the decision by the Hanoi People's High Court to uphold the 9-year prison sentence of renowned Vietnamese author and journalist Pham Doy Trang. As State Department spokesperson Ned Price noted in a statement expressing concerns over the decision, Trang is recognized internationally for her work to advance human rights and good governance in Vietnam and was a 2022 winner of the Secretary of State's International Women of Courage Award. Trang was arrested in October 2020 and sentenced in December 2021 to 9 years in prison under Article 117 of Vietnam's Criminal Code, which criminalizes making, storing, distributing, or disseminating information, documents, and items against the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. International human rights organizations have called Article 117 a tool to silence individuals who are critical of the government, whether they are journalists, writers, or citizens exercising their fundamental right to free expression. The UN Working Group of Arbitrary Detention found Trang's detention to be arbitrary and in contravention of Vietnam's international human rights commitments and obligations. The government held Trang in pretrial custody for a year without allowing her access to a lawyer. In the nearly 2 years she has been detained, Trang's health has reportedly suffered. Spokesperson Price said the United States urges Vietnam to ensure adequate medical care and to allow access to Trang to assess her medical condition. In its most recent report on human rights conditions in Vietnam, the State Department cited NGOs that estimated as of August 2021, authorities held between 130 and 288 persons for political reasons. The State Department wrote, from January 1st to November 9th, authorities detained 29 and convicted 27 persons who were exercising internationally recognized human rights, such as freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, and association. Spokesperson Price said, Trang's continued detention is the latest instance in an alarming pattern of arrests and sentencing of individuals in Vietnam for peacefully expressing their opinions. We call on the Vietnamese government to release Trang and to allow all individuals in Vietnam to exercise their right to freedom of expression without fear of retaliation, consistent with the human rights provisions in Vietnam's constitution and Vietnam's international obligations and commitments.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.